My name's Alistair Spears. We'll get Yoni up at the end to help us with some questions. I am the guy that works in Seattle at Microsoft, so obviously my opinion on this is how it is supposed to work and was envisioned to work. Yoni can tell us how it actually works if there's any deviation from hype to reality. But really the things that we'll cover here in this session, I want to just talk about MSI, WSUS approach versus Pro Plus as well, just to recap that, just to make sure we're all clear. I want to touch on the auto upgrade experience as well for those existing 2013 customers, just to reemphasize that. And show hands who's already on Office 365 Pro Plus and who's configured to get automatic updates. Who's surprised they're not on Office 2016 yet? Anyone? Yep. Okay, so we'll talk about that really quickly. We'll talk about the new branching strategy, and then we'll get into the deployment stuff. We'll get into the meat and potatoes of this session. And I'll share with you some things that can really make you better at doing this deployment stuff. So, MSI WSUS, this is the volume license product, the Office 2016 Professional Plus. It was released on September 22nd. It will be supported through mainstream support until September 22nd, 2021. And we supported an extended support till 2026. Now, that whole time, it'll look exactly the same. It won't change, it won't get updates. And probably at some stage in the next 10 years, it will stop working with Office 365. Probably. We'll probably make some change. Nothing to announce, no plans in the pipeline that will break connectivity with a 10-year-old client. But it's a pretty good bet, just based on our past history, you know, the rate that the technology is changing right now. We expect that MSI product over time won't be as compatible with Office 365 as the new stuff. Already, it doesn't have capabilities like Office 365 Groups. It won't have capabilities like Morph Designer, some of the PowerPoint features. You know, it's kind of funny to think that even there are PowerPoint features now that are based on cloud connectivity and using machine learning and cloud computing as well. The new model is called Office 365 Pro Plus. The package type behind the scenes is called Click to Run. You'll probably hear us using those terms interchangeably. Pro Plus is the license. Click to Run is the deployment package as well. Obviously, Pro Plus comes with a whole bunch of other things. It comes with iPad apps, iPhone apps, Mac apps, but they're not part of that Click to Run package. So we're really focusing on the Click to Run package. That's the thing you deploy to Windows in this session as well. It's a virtualized package. It shares a kind of a lineage, if you like, with AppV. At one point, it was actually a fork of the AppV project, and now we've built extra capabilities into it. If you think about AppV as a virtualized package, the great thing about AppV is it has app isolation. Apps don't get to work with other apps. They sort of run in their own little sandbox environment. The problem with Office is everyone wants to play with Office. You have your SAP add-ins. iTunes has a Outlook add-in just to help you sync calendars with your iPhone and those sorts of things. So there's so many add-ins in there. We took AppV, we forked it, we loved the rapid development package approach of that. We loved the fact that you can merge and morph AppV packages. We didn't like the fact that it didn't play well with all the add-ins, so we punched holes through that virtualized bubble so that it's kind of a fairly porous sandbox now. So you don't get those capabilities, you do get some of the other capabilities in that click-to-run package. And it's really designed to kind of solve some of these challenging problems. The problem with Office, the problem that we've always had with Office, is that it's used by everybody. Everyone uses Office. It's a problem when Office breaks. It's something that we don't, as IT professionals, don't really spend a lot of time thinking about until the phones start ringing, something starts changing. It's kind of like oxygen in a business environment. And we're coming up to some end of support moments for legacy versions of Office. Office 2007 is now out of support. Office 2007 is now out of support. Office 2010 is coming up out of support. If you think forward to 2019, you have 4 years to plan that massive upgrade if you're on Office 2010. You probably did Windows 7 at the same time. Windows 7 and Office 2010 are all both ending support about the same time. Sounds like a long way away to have 4 years to do a massive upgrade like that. Chances are you don't have budget this year. You'll think about it next year. Then it'll be really urgent the year after that. Before you know it, you'll be behind and you'll be trying to negotiate some custom support agreement with Microsoft, which is basically where we ask you to pay for the full salary an entire engineer just to sit there and apply security patches to old products. So you don't want to do that. But it's costly. It's time consuming. You don't have the money. So we need a cheaper way to do it. We need to be able to show immediate value. It's great to have these sorts of capabilities and have a 6-month roadmap of rolling these things out. But our users are more and more accustomed to things just being able to turn on. If they want a feature, they can go to the web. They can see it in a web app. They've heard about all these great capabilities coming in Office 365, maybe, probably not. But imagine if they did hear about it and we got our marketing right. We had ads and people were excited about groups and Delve and those sorts of things. Then you'd be under pressure to show immediate value and roll that out faster. And that's really what we're trying to solve with Click to Run. So when it comes to Pro Plus, there's really a very prescriptive model we like to take you all through. And one of the things that if you leave with nothing else today, I'd say it's great to innovate on how you're using Office 365. It's great to innovate on all the things you can do, extend with Office 365, the platform you can build on it. Do not innovate with how you go around deploying Office 365. You're not the first one. You're not the only one. You don't get to play around with the architecture and set that up and decide that, well, maybe I need some more web front-end servers over here and some more storage over here. It's a service. It's done. It's multi-tenanted. You don't need an architect. You need a removalist, right? You're trying to move from A to B. B's already built. You don't have to stand that up. And that's an important differentiator. And what it means, from our perspective, is that we see a lot of customers with kind of the same problems. You may be starting at a different place, but you're going to end up at the exact same position in Office 365. It's a standard service. So our guidance is getting more and more prescriptive with how migrating to any Office 365 service, and Pro Plus especially. So making sure you've evaluated what's new, auditing your environment, plan the impact, test app compat, deploy the product, manage the build, train your users. These are kind of the 7 things that you really need to focus on as you look at it. And the nice thing about following these 7 processes is that Microsoft will build content, tools, guidance, presentations at Ignite, handouts, and those sorts of things that you can take back to the office and pretend you did all the work and pass it off as your own great work. So you can cheat when you're following this, or you can innovate and you can try new things. You can make very courageous decisions in how you want to roll these things out and those sorts of things, but you're kind of going it alone if you decide to do that. So a couple of things. What's new in Office 365 Pro Plus? And what's new and what about the traditional Office? There's a bunch of similarities, right? They're both client applications. The amount of people that say, well, is Office 365, is it really on my PC or is it just a web app? It's not. Office 365 Pro Plus is a client application. Gets installed locally, uses DLLs, chews up your RAM, not our RAM, all those sorts of things. It's a very similar architecture. You can deploy it in the same way. You can deploy it as part of your image. You can deploy it with System Center. You can deploy it through scripting. You can deploy it from a USB key. It shares the same group policies, shares the same extensibility items, has the same macros, same add-ins, same cloud app model that you can extend as well. There are some new features and new things to think about. Licensing and activation is different. Identity and authentication are different. Office 365 Pro Plus is a user subscription, not a device-based license. What that means is the user signs in to the application. It's that signing that user is essentially assigned a license, and the user can use Office from any of the PCs they run, rather than having the license of that copy of Office assigned to that particular piece of hardware. The deployment technology is different, the click-to-run deployment technology. Product updates and versions are very different as well. Office 365 Pro Plus is still under active development. What that means is we're checking in new features every day into the code base. We're compiling that every month, and we're making that available. Office 365 Pro Plus will not look anything like Office 2016 in 10 years' time. It'll have evolved quite significantly. There are auditing capabilities so that you can now see which users are using which applications, how they've activated those copies of Office. And you can see all that through the Office 365 admin admin center. The source file packages are different, essentially a click-to-run package rather than an MSI, MSP. And we can support side-by-side of clients with some catches, but generally, because it's based on ATV, you can actually play along nicely with an older version of the MSI. So you can have, for instance, Office 2003 happily coexist with Office 365 Pro Plus in the click-to-run fashion. We never were able to do this before. We've always tried, but generally we get all sorts of interesting situations around MIME type conflicts and DLL conflicts, and it gets really messy. It's possible to get side-by-side support to work, but it's not supported. It's one of those areas where there's that hard line of supported in that when you call us with problems, we pretend to help. Or there's that soft line, which is, well, you can try it, and maybe you can get it to work, but we're not really going to help. Compat concerns. I hear a lot about compatibility concerns, and I think we've all been burnt in the past about app compat issues with Office. The biggest one was when we changed the Office 97 file format. We were very scared about that one. Then we felt really concerned again when we made the jump from 2003 to 2007, introduced new file formats, introduced a whole new interface, and that caused a lot of challenges. The good news here is from 2016 and really from 2010 onwards, that legacy object model around app compat, macros, add-ins has remained consistent. We haven't added or deprecated any API calls since Office 2010. There's a few tweaks around security, but generally what we see now is apps, add-ins, and macros that don't work between these versions are really just because of poor coding practices. Maybe the ERP vendor has hard-coded a setting in that add-in to check for Office 2013 and 2013 only. There's actually one that was checking for Office with a version number that ended in 3. It stopped working with Office 2007. It started working amazingly in 2013. We saw no changes, just with poor coding practices. To move forward, though, we have this new apps for Office model, this cloud app model. It's based on web standards. It runs across PC, Mac, phones, and also the web. And so we're trying to move all of our add-in development going forward into that model. We're trying to get enterprise developers, our ISVs, to embrace that model. Then they can run those add-ins on their iPads, on their iPhones, on their Android phones, through the web, and those sorts of things. Obviously, we've been around for 30 years. We have a lot of that legacy stuff there. We have no plans to deprecate it. But the first step in any deprecation is disparaging it and starting to call it legacy and stopping work on it. And so that's really where we are with the kind of the macro model. All of our active development now is in this Office apps for Office model going forward. And the nice thing about using web standards is we can actually version some of the API calls so that we can have that same application work. Even if we do change an API, we can version the API call so the old apps can continue to work. Risk management. I'm not sure what I was going to say about risk management. Better risk management. There we have some telemetry tools. We know this is a big problem. We know it's a big concern. And we know you have hundreds of thousands, millions, sometimes billions of documents through your environment. You don't have time to test every single one. It's impossible. What we've built inside of Office is this Office telemetry capability that will actually scan and report back on the documents that users are actually using. So you can run this in the background essentially for 6 months, 3 months, just scanning, learning, listening, and seeing what apps are being used the most, which users have the most, most add-ins, most macros, which users are having problems with startup time, add-in load time, and all those sorts of things. And so the telemetry dashboard gives you insight into a lot of these challenges, which is really important, especially as you move to a model where you're moving faster on the client, and you can use these telemetry tools to actually get a sense of what's going on before the help desk starts ringing. It's essentially a passive test mode. You can roll that out and just listen and see what problems are coming up and see which users you think you may have more problems with. If you know Dave from finance is a power user of Excel, you know that maybe if you are going to do some testing, maybe he's the guy to go and ask if you're testing for the finance team. Those sorts of things are really important going forward as well. So click-to-run, a couple of things. Things you need to know about click-to-run. We've had it around since Office 2010. It's actually the default install type for all home copies of Office. the rationale there being we've had a lot of trouble with home users over the last 30-odd years getting them to apply service packs, hot fixes, listening to Patch Tuesday. Grandma generally has lax security standards and patch methodologies. And so the notion of this AppV package that it can self-repair, self-patch itself, essentially pull updates rather than push updates, and essentially merge itself, is really important in that home market. And we introduced it with commercial subscriptions in 2013 as well for the Office clients through Office 365. So it's been iterated a couple of times now. We continue to improve it. Basically, the way to think about it from an install flow point of view is you're using a tool called the Office Deployment Tool to download that package straight from our Office 365 content delivery network. That's little parts Azure, little parts Akamai, little parts custom stuff we build ourselves. And really, that's downloading that full AppV package. You can then configure it to install, run, roll out, and all the settings you need. Users can also install it from the portal. So users can install Office 365 Pro Plus at home on their own personal devices. They choose your own devices as well. And we actually give you the ability to install up to 5 PCs or Macs per user using that model. So, little known secret. The licensing says up to 5 PCs and Macs. Where we start cutting you off is actually 10. So, you know, you can essentially run 10 PCs across the organization. You can activate 10 PCs, whether they're a mix of your own, your home PCs, and those sorts of things as well. We constantly struggle with this. When we introduced this Office 365 Pro Plus at first in 2013, 5 PCs sounded like a lot. Anyone got more than 5 PCs now? A few, yeah. We're starting to get up there. We kind of bumped it to 10. We didn't change the licensing because that's really hard. We have to talk to the lawyers. We can tweak the technology much faster, though. And so we just bumped it. That's a soft cutoff of 5 PCs or Macs now. It's really 10. And we're constantly reevaluating what that should be. Really, we want to set it in a way that you just don't have to worry about it. But at the same time, we don't want to set it in a way that you can deploy to thousands of PCs because we know that's not realistic. And so we're constantly discussing what the right number is based on how many people are using PCs today. So that's an area of ongoing discussion in Office 365 Pro Plus. So the install process, what happens? Basically, when you click install, there's a virtual file system created. And that virtual file system is run and slowly filled with data from that install source that you've either downloaded, or if it's coming from direct from the portal, direct from the CDN. That keeps running until you get to about 10%. And then once you get to 10%, streaming begins. We start streaming down the rest in system context to the PC as well. Generally, 2 minutes, it gets to about 15%. You can actually start launching some of the apps. You can actually run an app before it's fully finished installing with this click-to-run model. You actually see features inside of Office grayed out. It's kind of nice to do if you have a really slow connection. It's pretty hard to do if you have a fast connection. But basically what you can do is just start up Word or something like that. You can see grayed out items in the ribbon. And it's kind of cool. You can actually just hover over them. And just by hover overing them in the background, Office is actually reprioritizing the features it downloads next. And so by hovering over, like let's say it's an insert chart or something like that, in the background, Office says, the most important piece for me to download next is the chart pack. And so you can hover over it. You can actually see it go from gray to lit up colorful in the background. Generally, that takes a little bit longer. You know, if you're doing it right, using System Center or something like that, or you're staging out those bits in advance, this is really just a file copy operation. If you're streaming down from the CDN, it's also a download operation as well. And then the final 10% adds things like the add-ins, licensing stuff, and all the other things that rounds out a fully functioning Office to be a member of society. So that's essentially the install process as it goes through. In addition to the install process, we're changing the way that we do updates. We release a new build every month. It's very different to the way that we approach Office 2016, Office 2013, Office 2010. That it's not just a patch. Every month is a total new build. It's a recompilation of the entire Office package. And in that new Office package, it's essentially the same size. It's 1 gig, 850 megs, depending on what you've got included. And every month that build gets released, and essentially what happens there is that the Office client does a delta sync and uses an algorithm we call binary delta compression to actually work out, to work out what's different between those two builds, and then it just copies over the bits it needs. So it essentially self-heals. It sort of merges itself and transforms the package it has already on the PC, takes the delta, and puts that delta in and transform that package to the new bit. So you're not really adding a patch. You're actually just doing a transform operation on the binary itself. So it's a very different way of doing patches. Much more efficient, much faster. Allows you to continue running the apps while that patching is underway, and then shutting down Office, restarting it. The next time you restart it, it'll be running as that new transformed build. We're trying to get away from forcing you to restart Windows, because we know that can sometimes take a minute, 2 minutes, 20 minutes. If you've got the Windows 10 threshold 2, 40 minutes as you're doing those upgrades. We also allow you to kind of take control of that. And some of the things that we've been told over and over again is we love this model, but Microsoft, you need to give us more control over when we roll out those updates. We don't want to leave you in control of these updates. We know we have millennials that have all their bring your own devices, and here's a picture of millennials. This is not actually our service management team. We know they have all of these needs, and they bring their own PCs, and they want to manage it themselves, but we still run the network, and we don't want you pushing out massive upgrades without our knowledge and those sorts of things. And so we do have those capabilities to allow you to take control and push out those updates as well. So branches. There's no more service packs in Office. That applies for both the MSI, volume licensing bits, and the new version of Office 365 Pro Plus. What does that mean for volume licensing? Well, it means that in 3 years' time, there's going to be a whole lot of updates to apply after the fact. What it means for Office 365 Pro Plus is a little bit different. It's self-healed. Every month is essentially a service pack. We're adding features, adding security updates at the same time. You have a choice of branches. There's actually a fourth branch that we released last week as well. But basically, current branch, really, that's our standard consumer branch, where we add features and updates whenever they're ready, every month. Current branch for business, we essentially do security updates every month, and then three times a year, we have a window to add features in February, in June, and October. So there are our special patch Tuesdays. There we'll add features. In addition to adding those features, we'll also continue to support the older version for the next 4 months after the new feature pack comes out, the new CBB branch. And in addition to that, we'll actually make available that version of the current branch 4 months early as well. And so 4 months early, you can actually get a preview of what that current branch will look like with all of the features at the same time. This is going to take a while to sink in. So if this seems really strange and like a very hard kind of logic problem, it is. If it's any consolation, essentially what it means for us as well is when we add a security pack, a security update, we have to do it 5 or 6 times. We have to apply that security update to every single branch, because every branch is a different line of code. That's why they're only supported for kind of 12 months end-to-end on any single branch, from when they become first release to where they go into mainstream CBB, to when they come into that extended CBB model, and then they finally retired. So I showed this yesterday. I'll go through it again. I'll try and go through it quickly, because I know there's some people in the room that didn't see this. But essentially, every monthly update, feature update, security update. And stop me with any questions here, because this is a really important concept that I really want you guys to grasp. What it means is, over time, we essentially get this model where the current branch is checking along, got a new feature in Word, got a new feature in PowerPoint, got a new feature in Excel, security updates being applied the whole time as well. CBB1 is essentially a lagged or deferred branch. Right? CVV1 looks like the build of the current branch 4 months ago, except with all of the security packs in the preceding 4 months still applied. So what you see there is that CVV1 is essentially staggered. And basically, it stops. No extra features get added in CVV1 until CVV2 in June. And now in CVV2 in June, that's going to have all of the features that were applied up until February, because it's a 4 months lagged as well. If there's a feature that gets added in, let's say, December, it doesn't make its way into CVV1. It makes its way into CVV2. It's missed that window. You kind of control all this through the config XML file. You can do it through group policy as well. And basically, I think it helps to kind of illustrate this with a feature like Clippy. And this is the one we went through yesterday as well. But basically, we add a new feature. Intelligent agents are cool again. We think Clippy needs to come back to office. And so we put it in the product in October. And it comes through in CVV1. Why does it come through in CVV1? Well, because in October, what we also did is we took a snapshot of the current branch and we moved it to the first release branch. And then we continued to patch it. And so Clippy slipped in a little bit earlier there into the first release branch, even though it's been in current branch every release as well. Say a feature ships in March. Clearly, it can't be in CVV1 because that came out the month before. And CVV1 only had feature updates up to and including October. So would it come in CVV2? The answer is no. It'll come in CVV3 because it's missed the window where we copied the current branch in February to be the first release branch of CVV2. And so essentially that feature there isn't just 4 months delayed. It's actually, we're looking at kind of a 6 month delay in that particular example there. So this is essentially this notion of the staggered release cycle. This is new. Hopefully it's helpful. It gives you plenty more time to test. It gives you a visibility to know exactly what will happen, when features will be added. You can set your watch by it and those sorts of things. This is the first time we've changed service packs in 30 years. So we expect there's going to be some interesting changes going on. We're trying to build this Office release notes model so that you can see in every build which features have been added in those sorts of build. Release notes have been around for longer than Office, except in Office. So we're actually bringing that into Office now. We have a website, aka.ms/office-release-notes, where we'll be actually publishing all those updates there. Right now, we're about two builds behind in publishing those release notes. So there's some teething troubles as we get the kind of process set up to document everything we do that we're adding into these branches, but that's something we're committed to doing. We're trying to get all of this underway before we get to February and the CVV1 availability. The other question we get is, how do we get the rollout? If you're set up to auto-upgrade, we essentially are going to auto-upgrade you at some point over the next 6 months. The way that we approach this is really a staggered rollout. We push this out to a small set of groups, slightly larger set of groups, our home users first, then our business users, then our Pro Plus users as well. Important to note, this upgrade is all by PC. Essentially, as a copy of Office connects back to Office 365 every day, 5% of those connections, those pings, are going to return with a, hey, yes, you're a valid user still. And also, do we have a deal for you? We're going to send down a 1 gig package in the background to each one of those 5% of PCs every day. As long as automatic updates are on, as long as you're up to date on your updates, as long as you're still a subscriber, as long as the PC meets the system requirements, that there's enough disk space spare, 1 gig, if you have, maybe just as well, those disparaging comments weren't recorded. How's that? Better? Okay, sorry. So anyway, automatic update is great. And here are the settings of how it will run. Depending on how you have it configured, if you have multiple language packs deployed in your environment, every language pack is essentially 200 megs. So if you have every language pack, you may be looking at a install automatic upgrade of about 10 gigs to come down in the background. This is what it looks like. Essentially, once it's silently downloading in the background, there's no way to know if that's going on, by the way. You actually see this pop up once it's finished downloading. Update Office. If your user decides to click that, they'll get a elevation request. They'll be asked to shut down the apps they have running, and then they'll go through the installation pre-check process, and off it goes. Suffice to say, bad idea. Don't do it if you're in a managed environment. Maybe automatic updates were fine for you when it was just monthly Delta updates, but this is a significant upgrade, not just an update that's coming down the pipe. So there is a group policy setting to leave you on auto updates, but turn off the auto upgrade. Do that before February if you're in that situation. You know, there's a lot of valid reasons why you might run this particular auto upgrade approach. Bring your own device, choose your own device, remote workers, home workers, and those sorts of people that are kind of generally outside of your sphere of influence anyway. If users have downloaded from the portal directly, they're actually in auto update unless you've set group policies to make them otherwise. So those guys will all start seeing that auto upgrade from about February at a rate of 5% of PCs a day. Question? They can, yeah, they can ignore it. One thing to note, as soon as the download starts, they don't get any more security updates. So if they ignore it for a month, 2 months, you're slowly getting the risk of them falling behind in your patch management scenario. So yeah, you can ignore it. It's not, and actually I believe the final version also has a little X that you can dismiss it completely. It'll pop up on the next session as well.
Also, do they need to be, obviously there needs to be local admins to install the upgrade.
Yes.
About the monthly updates?
They don't need to be local admins for the monthly updates. They do for the upgrade. Yep. All right, so we've all agreed not doing that. Does not sound like fun. So we're going to do a managed deployment and IT-led approach. So we think about how we do the deployment. Local installation, network installation, enterprise software distribution, bake it into our Windows image, use appv. We can actually take appv and re-appv the appv package, the forked appv package, or deliver through remote desktop services. All of these options are supported through Office 365 Pro Plus. So you don't have to think of a new way to distribute and deploy the bits. Group policy is different. For those that are paying attention with group policy, you know that all of the Office group policies are in a 15 folder. Why is it a 15 folder? Well, it's the 15th version of Office. This is the 16th version of Office. It coincides with Office 2016, which is super confusing for everyone because the 15 version was Office 2013. We didn't actually have a 13 version. We had a 14 version, which was Office 2010. It was Office 2007, 2010, and then 12 was 2003. We skipped 13, it's unlucky. We added some more group policies. There are changes, there are adds to the group policy. I don't expect you to read this because it's about group policy. I just kind of wanted to show you that there are new group policies. Removed. We removed only 4 group policies. These actually have new group policies that apply a different approach. We're actually removing the enable automatic upgrade group policy. That was one we added in August in preparation for this upgrade, and it'll be removed in 2016, maybe added in the future. And we are removing the disable update notifications group policy as well. InfoPath's deprecated, gone. There's no more InfoPath. It's not part of Office 2016. The benefit of that is we get to get rid of 165 InfoPath group policies. I didn't realize we had 165, but we do. But you don't have InfoPath in the 2016 client, and so you don't have the InfoPath group policies. Recreating all of the group policies you have is a pretty annoying task, so we have tools to help with that. And this is really the thing that I'd love for you guys to take away as well is this aka.ms/office scripts. I'm a program manager, which means that the developers don't let me check in code into the product. We just have to give them specifications and let them build it. And so essentially, I get it all out of the system with open source GitHub libraries. And so we publish a whole bunch of PowerShell scripts. Some of these written by myself, some of them by our community members, some of them by our developers themselves that we just haven't put into the product itself. So aka.ms/office scripts. It's an open source project. You can take it and do whatever you want with them. They're just PowerShell scripts. Available to everyone. Support, there's no official support for these PowerShell scripts. I get asked that a lot. But they're PowerShell scripts. They're using supported APIs. So we've tested them. They work once. They'll continue to work. You can discuss it with us on the community site. The PowerShell scripts themselves aren't supported, but all of the calls and all the things that the PowerShell scripts are doing are fully supported. And so they're kind of supported, which is not a good answer, I know.
The SCCM one's binary, but I'm pretty sure
the source code. The source code's there as well. Yeah, we just stuck up a binary as well to make it easy. I might switch PCs and show you kind of what this looks like really quickly. Who's used GitHub before? Anyone? Okay. It's pretty straightforward. It's a source code repository. We have a whole bunch of markdown files with the documentation about what to do. Please contribute if you have your own PowerShell ideas that you want to add in as well. In addition to PowerShell scripts, there's a couple of other things we've thrown in there. Like Yoni mentioned, there's an SCCM plugin, EXE. So the source code's all published there, and we also published a binary executable. We also have a little website that we've created as well. If anyone's made mistakes hand-coding XML files in Notepad before, you'll really like this tool. It's a web page that allows you to just pick options and generate your XML file. So here, choose the product. I want Office 365 Pro Plus. Let's add in Visio. Let's add in a branch. Add in a language. Add the language. Add product. There we go. It's just automatically adding now Visio to that config XML file. Pretty straightforward. It's also pretty handy for all of the branch details. We have a bunch of different branches. Business, first release for current branch for business. The current branch itself. First release current, and those sorts of things as well. First release current is essentially what's known as our Windows Insider build. You might have seen a blog post, an announcement that we have this Windows Insider that anyone can sign up to and see the latest features, and all you have to do is fill out all your personal details and put it in a website and those sorts of things. Or you're an IT pro and you just use the Office deployment tool and you set it to branch equals first release current and you skip all of that sign-up stuff. So that's essentially what you can do with the ODT. It's all just published to the CDN in that approach. You know, we can go down here and do some other things if we want to do updates. We may want to remove a particular product. Let's say, let's automatically accept the EULA. Let's put the full display settings on. Enable logging. We can set a custom log file there. We can set some properties here to auto-activate. There's a package GUID setting here as well that you can configure. You can turn on shared computer activation licensing. We also have some templates, just some standard templates there as well. Then you can essentially download this file and use it with the Office deployment tool. Pretty straightforward there. If you're newer to PowerShell, we also have this site powershell.office.com. These are kind of the nice, simple PowerShell 101 scripts dealing with Office 365. It's essentially tutorials and those sorts of things. The stuff on GitHub gets a little bit more complex, a little bit more advanced, and those sorts of things. We have some weird and wonderful ones here. In fact, I'll just take you through some of the kind of strange ones as we jump back to the slides. On the GitHub site, please log in, put requests. We've kind of run out of all the crazy things that we thought we should do with PowerShell, so if you've got some other ideas, we'd love to do them. It's kind of fun. It's a nice release after a day of writing specifications. This one's pretty straightforward. This is the copy of the GPOs. And so here we can look. We have Office 2013. We've got some GPOs configured there. What we can do, we look at 2016. Uh-oh, we've got nothing already defined. So we can essentially take our script there, Office GPO settings, Office 2013, target it to 2016, and away we go. We're essentially just putting back all the GPOs. We're listing out all the ones that we've added there as well. Pretty straightforward, nice tool to do it. You guys can do this now if you're planning to do 2016. It's group policies, so you can do them at any stage and just prepare the environment for the eventual 2016 deployment. In terms of auditing, we talked about the telemetry dashboard earlier as well, but it's kind of a bit of a pain to set up. There's a SQL database that you have to configure. There's a little agent. There's a group policy to enable the agent on all the existing Office installations. What the telemetry agent essentially does is write XML files to a shared networks store. And then you need a little other app that runs and scoops up all those XML files and ingests them into the SQL database. And then you can query that SQL database with a spreadsheet that comes as part of your Office install. This is just a script to do all of that together and set it up in one fell swoop as well. Again, I mentioned this earlier as I was digressing into a different topic, but planning the impact, the telemetry tool is a great idea for that. You can couple that with your user subscriptions, understand the authentication approaches that you have, minimum attributes, and those sorts of things as well. So let's jump into another example. Deploy click to run. You're probably using System Center or something like that to do Office click to run. This script, the only nice thing about this script is it actually detects what's currently installed on the Office box itself. So maybe for some reason you have a standard image of Office, but you've added language packs, or you've added Project or Visio over time to that particular environment. So this deploy Office click to run script essentially joins together a bunch of the other scripts that we have inside of the environment. Basically, let's have a look here. We have a couple of languages. I should pretend to be faking this. But we have a couple of languages installed. We can essentially run the command here, generate ODT config XML file. What that's going to do is actually going to build us an XML file based on the current settings of that particular application. So here, so well, this is what we've detected. So your Office client install will look like Pro Plus Retail with these languages applied. Pretty straightforward there. Then we'll run this script. It's essentially calling a bunch of those PowerShell scripts in order to essentially generate that script, then deploy Office with the script it just generated. That's a pretty straightforward example of kind of PowerShell 101 there. There you go, that's the new install experience. Wow, that was fast. It's that fast every time. And so there you go, that's essentially how it works. So distribution management, some of the new capabilities we're adding in System Center Configuration Manager 2016 is the ability to be essentially branch aware. So the Config Manager will understand this topic of branches, not only in Office, but also in Windows 10. And so you can configure certain users to apply certain branches. We're actually sending notifications through WSOS when new branches are released for multiple builds as well. So you can start to manage Office 365 Pro Plus just as you managed Office in the past through WSOS update notifications and those sorts of things as well. I won't skip this slide. This is a useful one as well, uninstalling Office. We have a tool on the support site called Fixit. Basically, it goes through and just removes everything in Office. You can also uninstall Office pretty easy with the setup.exe configure, and you just change your setup, your config XML to remove the product rather than add the product, run setup again, and it'll actually uninstall that particular product. This one is a little bit more hardcore. This one we call the Nuke Office from Orbit option, where we go through and systematically remove every single file, every single group policy, every single setting that might have anything to do with Office from the environment as well. So if the other options break, sorry?
That's a bare bones if you've got some weird and wonderful bloody...
Yeah, if something's going wrong that you can't figure out, you've run fix it, you've run the configure, or it just fails on configure, and you don't know, you don't care, you don't have time to test it, you just want it normal, yep, this one is a great option for that. I have a PowerShell demo of that one. I'm not sure why I created that. You probably don't want to see that, do you? It seemed like a good idea at the time. On the topic of uninstall, kind of leads to the topic of rollback, right? Maybe you've deployed something, a new monthly update has come out, but something has changed, and you don't want to do that. So you can manage this with System Center Config Manager, essentially by pushing out specific release numbers to say this machine must be on these release numbers. You push out another update and say move to this this build number as well. You can also run it through command prompt. Essentially, we have the ability here and a script that kind of shows you how to do this. That's the old script. Hang on. Let's do the install first, and then we'll uninstall it. I think is what we did here. Let's speed that up. Okay. This is the end-to-end script. So we've installed that. We've got the details. We'll install the script. Never mind. It's important. But yes, we do have a rollback script on the site. It's pretty handy for those situations where you've rolled out testing and you want to quickly roll back a build as well. If you have System Center and tools like that, you can do a lot of this stuff just natively in the System Center tools, but it's useful to do these sorts of things as well. User training. We don't have a PowerShell script that can solve this one. But we did build a PowerShell script that will bulk email your users a standard template that says, hey, something has changed. And so you can actually use the PowerShell script to roll out some of these things. Some key resources and training, go to success.office.com. This is the site that our user training team run. They do a great job of brochures, pamphlets, email templates, Word documents, posters, all sorts of content you can imagine. And you can take that and you can use that in your training team as well. Depending on how your organization does training, you've got a whole bunch of different approaches. But success.office.com, it's organized around scenarios rather than particular products. And so there's no, you can't see Word, nor the training resources for Word. It's essentially organized with how users think of it rather than how IT thinks about it. So you may not understand it at first. I don't particularly understand the difference between Outlook and email on the go. But it's done in a kind of a user context that users will understand. They don't have to know the difference between what is Outlook and what is OneNote and those sorts of things. And generally, training teams, HR teams, change management teams have responded a lot better to the content like that rather than our content that was very product specific throughout the product as well. Roadmap's also important. You know, just because you can opt into a build that only updates 3 times a year still means you're doing 3 times as many updates as you've ever done before in a year, kind of 9 times over 3 years. And so the roadmap's increasingly important to keep an eye on to see as features roll out. There's a bunch of features on the roadmap. If anyone hasn't seen that site, that's tied directly into our engineering systems. So when we publish a build, we essentially have to put something in the roadmap. And that setting is managed throughout that site. So you see it'll go from InDesign to testing to being rolled out to finally fully provisioned. Sometimes those features can take up to 6 months to fully roll out as we go through every single tenant. It's a common scenario that we can get the testing out pretty quickly to a couple hundred tenants, to 1,000 tenants. Then we get into the bulk phase of deploying hundreds of thousands of tenants at a time with the new feature. And then the last mile, the last 1%, can often take another 3 months for us to roll out features, whether there's something specific about those tenants or an incompatibility or something like that. So you may see in the roadmap that the features are just listed as still rolling out, but you may see them already in your particular tenant. It just means they're not fully rolled out to every tenant yet as well. So that's a quick wrap around everything we've shown there. You know, Office 365 Pro Plus, same deployment options. You can use the same approaches that you've used with MSI for years. You have more flexibility about doing faster updates. The new package format is much more scalable, much more suited to keeping Office, the client, in line with all the changes that are going on in Office 365, the service, as well. You have an option of automatic updates or user-initiated updates. This is Ignite. We're all IT pros. We're all adults. We all know that's a bad idea. We can also have the option of rolling that out through System Center and through the other tools, using group policies to block it as well. We didn't talk much about the new authentication and licensing processes, but if you're on Office 365, and who is on Office 365? Yeah. And who's not on Office 365 but is looking at Office 365 Pro Plus? A couple of people. Okay. So then you have some work to do around Active Directory to set up the kind of the core heartbeat dial tone of Office 365. That essentially involves synchronizing your Active Directory with Office 365. Service and assigning those licenses. So that's a step. Generally what we've seen so far with Pro Plus is that people start with Exchange, they do email first, and they roll out email because their email servers are on fire, they have 100 meg mailboxes, they really want an unlimited mailbox and those sorts of things. So there's a huge amount of kind of IT pain in just running Exchange servers day to day that really have pushed Exchange as the first workload for Office 365. And then often, the client is the second one. So usually I can just rely on the Exchange team to explain all the Active Directory synchronization and licensing issues. But if you're doing Pro Plus first, you know, that stuff is standard across all Office 365 workloads. It involves setting up your Azure AD synchronization tool. Maybe you want to go as far as ADFS, or maybe you even just want to manage it through the portal directly and not have any synchronization between your Active Directory and the client. And then, of course, telemetry. Telemetry for auditing and reporting on that environment. As you think about this always up-to-date Office client where you're rolling out builds monthly, you're rolling out security updates monthly, and you're rolling out feature updates every 4 months as well, that telemetry tool goes from a nice-to-have to work out who's got macros that broke to a really important tool to actually analyze and watch what's going on in the client environment itself. So with that, thank you very much for your time. That's all we have. So now, Yoni, this is time where you get to give the retort of all the things. So they're the things we've been working on. You know, what do you think we're missing? What are the other things we need to add to make it simpler? What would you like to see us add to the product?
You put me on the spot.
Yeah.
Can anyone not hear me without the microphone? So there are a couple of key parts of the conversation that I've been having over the last few months with your engineering team behind your back.
Yep.
And most of them relate to the deployment and the mechanics of how the actual click-to-run deployments and updates are working. There's a huge amount of activity at the moment in large enterprise that are really keenly looking for better integration with SCCM. And whilst there's some really cool stuff on the horizon for SCCM 2016, I've been pushing the engineering team around what they're doing on 2012 R2 because I know that, hands up, who in the room is planning to use System Center in some capacity to work with Pro Plus, right? Whole room. And hands up if you've got 2016 on the cards in the next 12 months. Wow, really? You guys all going to do upgrades or are you going to do clean builds?
Let them have it. We'll go and build some more Excel charts instead of working on the 2012 R2.
All right. Well, maybe it's not a bigger problem as I thought it was. But
yeah, that's something we're working on. We're going to add in the 2012 R2 support. 2016 support is going to be first, so you'll see that first, and then we'll look at a subsequent update to support the 2012 R2.
In the meantime, if you're struggling at the moment trying to support either 2013 or 2016 Pro Plus builds on SCCM 2012 R2, the best kept secret ever is one of the scripts on Alice's GitHub repository is a tiny little binary that was written by the lead engineer from the Office Pro Plus engineering. or if you have a DFS share that can, you know, share those that UNC path across all your locations. But say you have hundreds of sites and you've already invested in SCCM distribution points on them, the challenge that you've got is that there's no group policy value that you can set in that field that will say, just go to your local SCCM, you know, percentage SMS DP percentage if you're an SCCM guy, and get your updates from there. And so what this little tool does, are you trying to find it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what this little tool does is very simply sets your the computer's local update path to the UNC path of that package in your SCCM environment, and then triggers an automatic update to take place at that very moment. So you can schedule this little script to trigger on all your machines, you know, on a time and date of your choosing, and when this runs, it will set everyone to their local DP and then run the update. So this kind of solves the biggest problem that I've seen around SCCM integration, the one that's caused some pretty big organizations to have to go and build DFS shares to solve for this, which is double handling. So definitely, I think it's worth pointing this one out as well.
Yeah.
Good question.
Unrelated, maybe. I'll wait for the end. Sorry.
Okay. Sure. The other thing that I think is still to come, something that you might not have thought about with this exciting new branching. I mean, the branching is really exciting. We need that. There are a lot of customers out there who are saying, hey, you just can't give me these. If I don't want a feature update, I still need the security update. So it's really good that that's come now. One thing that's still in the works is how to manage that from a storage point of view. There's going to be a lot of guys in the room who go, oh, who cares? It's 1 gig, it's 2 gigs. It does add up. If you're keeping, you know, say, a previous 3 builds, because, you know, might take you a bit of time. You've got some guys who are on first release for business. You've got some guys who are on first release for current branch for business, and some guys who are on current branch for business. If you add that up, you might end up with 100 gig worth of builds that you need to carry around. And so if you times that by all your SCCM distribution points, I have a number of big global customers who have to fight their infrastructure team to get 50 gig of extra storage space on their local DPs. So if that is, you know, if carrying an extra 100 gig of binaries around is a problem, that's something that's still, you might just need to think about how many builds you want to carry, and if you want to just do one current branch for business and one first release to current branch for business.
We did add a new script, which is called something like Get All the Builds, which basically downloads the entire CDN to a local version. So if you do want to set up like a folder structure with your current branch folder, your current branch for business, and kind of replicate the CDN, there's a script there to do it. Yeah, it doesn't help. It kind of makes it worse.
Yeah.
But
So that's something that is, watch that space. So hopefully there's some good stuff.
And that's something that, you know, it's kind of the side effect of that whole approach of generating a new build every month. So one of the things we've been thinking about is, can we just do the delta? Should we just publish out a delta of those months so you can kind of transfer it? And it's an interesting question. They would get much smaller in terms of the network share. The downside is that you'd have to...
You're now no longer more than one update away.
That's right. Now you have to, like, if you deploy a new machine, then all of a sudden you have to go and apply, like, maybe 5 or 10 or... in 3 years' time, 30 different updates to that kind of base package. And so it's something we're grappling with at the moment. You may see some movement on that.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily a hard problem to just do the...
You can automate it and slipstream it, right?
Exactly. So it's something we're thinking about. The other thing we're thinking about, and love to have a discussion with people after this, is how far do we go about informing the users of changes to the product, in the product? On the Office mobile apps, when there's a new release, we pop up a, hey, here's a new release, here's a new feature, sort of thing. And mobile apps kind of do that. We've always stayed away from popping up like, hey, a new feature has popped up in Office inside of the Windows applications. It goes a great way of actually just self-training the users, but maybe it interferes with the way you want to do the training, the way you want to announce certain features, and those sorts of things as well.
Who thinks that would be a useful feature to have?
Group policy.
Group policy to turn that thing off if you don't want.
Then that's two features we have to add.
But you don't have to worry about the SCCM 2012
that's
thing.
Right.
So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right.
It's a wash. That's a system 17 problem.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Question at the back. Yeah.
To the same machine.
Same machine.
Easy. So when you say you've deployed Word, Excel, and Outlook, what you actually did is you excluded access. So in your config file, you would have excluded access and PowerPoint in this case as well. So to go and unexclude that, if that makes sense, is that fixed now?
Yeah, we fixed
that. There was a bug. The bug is fixed. So now all you need to do is remove that exclude app line that you can see there from your config, and then rerun setup again with that same config file without the exclude app in it, and access will.
Yeah. The dirty secret is the bits already down on the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You make Alistair explain to you what actually happens when you use this exclude app tag.
It's yeah.
So what was the bug then? Because I thought I tried this in a while.
The bug was that if you did what I just suggested that you do, previous build of Pro Plus, it wouldn't work, and you actually have to uninstall the whole Pro Plus build and reinstall.
So when was that fixed?
I think that was fixed in our October build in 2016. Yeah. We can check. Yeah. We'll get back to you on that.
I think it's fixed because we've had it.
Okay. Yeah.
Now someone asked Alistair what happens when you use the exclusion.
Yeah. Well, the downside of that approach is if you are thinking about just deploying Word or just deploying Outlook, you're still going to get a 1 gig package as well. That's kind of the hidden secret. It's just the one Office massive image that has everything in it. And then it's just this that is controlling which apps are actually exposed out of the virtual package and which ones aren't behind the scenes as well.
Now, there are a couple of queued up questions here.
Yeah. Yeah. It can, if you configure it to install that way. If you use...
Hey, and you're saying you have MSI version of...
Yeah, you want to leave MSI there.
Yeah, you can leave a 2013 MSI on and put 2016 Pro Plus.
By default, we uninstall it, yeah. Okay.
Hang on. This is where it gets interesting. So you have MSI 2013 installed, and you want to install Pro Plus 2013, the VisioAuth project. Is that the scenario?
Yes.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
What you can do, and this might fix your problem, is you can have MSI 2013 installed. I speak slowly for this because I lose myself sometimes. You can have MSI 2013 installed, and then you can install the Pro Plus version of VisioAuth project. Now that those are released, you can go and get them if you click the switch on your tenant. But you cannot run side by side any MSI 2013 product with any click to run 2013 product. Only if there's a step change. Only if the click to run package is at a 2016, then you can have any 2013 MSI next to it that you want.
So for our clients at the moment that have got 2012 or 2013 majority.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yeah.
If you're mixing the Vision project and the Office clients like that, then yes. You don't have to wait. You can get them right now. You just turn on first release on your tenant and you can have those click-to-run packages. But I would suggest that if you're looking to have mismatched Vision project versions from your Office version, then you...
So I think I'll let you straight with the Pro. It's just the Office package.
Oh, right.
Okay.
So do it 2016. I mean, our guidance right now is
you
don't
get nothing out of that Pro Plus
Don't deploy any more click to run 2013. Because if you deploy 2013 now, you have to move to 2016 the next year, so you may as well go straight to 2016. You can use ODT. You can use the new ODT to get 2016 now. And so roll out click to run 2016. That's how to get started. You know, there is some change management on the user side because that is a new version of Office. There's some new features. You could argue that, well, the benefit of rolling out the old one was it looks exactly the same. They might not notice, but you don't get any of the benefits of doing that rollout. You're just going through the motions for no real benefit, and you have to do it again with 2016 anyway. So, yeah, use the ODT and deploy out 2016 and remove the existing Office. Yeah. So, great question.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Office release notes.
Yeah, we're trialing 2016 already, and there's no guide that shows you how to build.
Yeah.
So something I've asked for, I should have asked you for it, actually. Like you could do
so
it.
This is the Office release notes site. It's on TechNet, but the easiest way to remember is aka.ms/office-release-notes. We've updated it, fantastic. What you can see here is current branch tells you the date it was published, tells you the version number. There is no magic numbering technique to realize that a particular build number is associated with a particular branch. So you actually have to use this site to, okay, that one ending in 1048 is actually current branch. Here are the things that were added in that particular branch as well. So this is the easiest way to know what's changed.
When the lag stops.
And we're like a day out. It still pops up on the CDN a day or two before we get around to posting it. It was much worse a month ago where it took us 2 weeks to get the updates out, and I got a lot of angry emails from everybody. But now we're getting much faster about this over time, and I think in 6 months, 12 months, you know, we're thinking about, do we notify you through Message Center that these things come out? Should we make it more apparent? One of the feature requests we've had, and if anyone show hands, maybe it'd be a good way to test this one, but if we showed in the file menu whether you're on current branch or current branch for business, in addition to the version number, useful feature. Yeah. Yeah. Why are we why didn't we do that in the first place? Great question.
Something I've asked for quite a bit is an RSS feed of that, because people want to actually automate scripting around.
That's right.
When they get that notification.
Yeah, and so the WSUS notification, there is actually a WSUS web service that's documented that we publish. There's a web service that we pull out those updates, similar to this, except machine readable for System Center, and for actually any other distribution technology to implement and read that web service. But you asked for easy ways. And so yeah, those are your kind of two options. Question? There shouldn't be a problem there. Yeah, you should be able to coexist. The rule is, yeah, so if you're having issues, the only reason you may have an issue there is that you have like a retail copy of Project rather than a volume license. The retail copies of Project and Visio are all built using Click to Run. So all of the kind of stuff you buy directly from the store is Click to Run. And so you can't have...
2010 Project.
No, it was actually. If it was a retail copy, not a VL copy. If it's a VL copy, it should be an MSI, and the MSI should be working with Click to Run side by side.
You know what it could be? Were they the same bitwise? Were they both 32 or 64 bit? That's certainly a supported scenario.
Okay.
You can't have one 64 and one 32 bit.
Yeah, love to follow up with that one. We can get support to take a look at it. Okay, well then I'll grab the support and we're off you and we can follow up. Yeah.
Running side by side MSI Click to Run.
Yep.
Does it generate any of the horrible sort of hybrid scenarios that we saw with like 2003, 2007, 2007, 2010, so like, well, not 2007, 2007. But
yeah, there's a couple of like whenever you're running two versions of Office at the same time, you're going to get some issues around MIME types, like who's on first in terms of opening Word documents and those sorts of things. And Outlook, you still can't have two copies of Outlook accessing the OST at the same time. Last in wins, so last installed essentially takes over the MIME types unless you specifically told it not to. Yeah. I think we're out of time, so thanks very much, guys. We'll hang around as well for any other questions.